Andreas, can you give us an update on all the work that's happening at the board?
Thank you very much, Bill. I'm delighted to. I'm looking at the helping hand of Jenny to put up the slides for me and move them. We have devoted, as Bill has said, a fair amount this time because we just thought that over the last meetings, it was more important to keep you updated and seek your counsel and input on the developments of the creation of the ISSB. And I was more than happy to take a step back and stay in the background for that. On the other hand, I want to take the opportunity to just outline some of the issues that have driven my first months and that I would like to share with you, especially when it comes to is there anything where I think we should be putting our resources on, where we should concentrate on, and things like that. We haven't had the time to do that properly, and that was really done on purpose. So here are the slides. Thank you, Jenny. Excellent. If we can move to slide two, perhaps. So whilst we do have an hour, I'm not going to spend lecturing you for an hour. I was thinking of perhaps reserving about 20 minutes for the slides only, and then open it up for discussion and for questions that you might have. Also, what I would like you to submit to us is whether you would like a more in-depth update about what has happened at the IASB. We usually provide you a slide deck with an appendix. We could either treat it as red base and only go for questions and answers to make most of the time available in the virtual format. But if you think you just would like to have a bit more background, a bit more flesh to the bone, let us know and we will then adjust the presentations going forward accordingly. So on this slide, you see my perspectives as the new chair. Now, obviously, as a new chair, you want to set your mark, but on the other hand, you do not want to screw it up on day one either. So I think I would like to mention you find actually in the bottom part of the slide deck where I set additional consideration and I come back to that. A new chair doesn't equate to a new work plan. It's not that with my arrival everything is set to zero and we start a completely new work program. I've taken over from Hans, who has had remarkable leadership, and I surely seek to take on his work, move in his footsteps, and continue the good work that he has all done. So if I can start with making some general observations, and these are largely driven from my previous role as the head of the German Standard Setter, I think the key challenge, and that probably equally applies to the IASB as it would apply to the ISSB, is to remain relevant in an ever faster changing environment. If we had heard anything in the consultation that has led to the formation of the ISSB, it was word urgency, I think, is just a sign of this faster changing environment. People request quick answers to arising problems. Yet on the other hand, we always have to balance the need for urgency with a need for robust due process and high quality, and that should never be compromised. And I think to find the right balance as to how much leeway you provide for adhering to urgency on the one hand, but do not cut corners on the other side, and really rely on good due process, good input, going to market, test the proposals, and have robust discussions until we really are satisfied that the product that has been developed can go out, I find actually quite challenging. And you will see some of the issues that I will be referring to. My second observation in that regard is we have seen some emerging topics that arose fairly quickly. Obviously, the COVID crisis was one, and the question, is there any need that we need to react similarly to when we witnessed the financial crisis? Is there anything that the board need to accelerate, to prioritize, or to move on to the agenda? By and large, I think the view of our board and also of our fellow national standard setters was that our literature seemed to be working fairly okay. You will recall that we had one additional piece of standard setting that was an amendment to IFRS 16 with regard to rent concessions that we put out and that was regarded quite highly and appreciated. In addition to that, the board has produced some educational material as to how do you apply our standards in situations of greater uncertainty, which was not really anything new. It was more of a constant reminder of where to look in our literature to find suitable answers when setting up your accounts. But by and large, I think we have shown that we can react quickly if needed. Now, I would like to extend that vision probably by one further dimension, and that is what I refer to as scanning the horizon. If there was one criticism that I have heard whilst being on a national standard setters front, it is that that standard setters in the area of financial reporting are sometimes accused of being backward-looking. We are very much concerned about today's and yesterday's problem, but seem to neglect tomorrow's issues. And that is an area that I think I'm quite sympathetic to. So what does that mean? It means basically that you scan the horizon for mega trends and mega topics that are coming up. Give you two examples. One is a fairly obvious one, which is the rise of intangibles. It is nothing that's coming overnight. It has been, I think, probably on the horizon for more than a decade. My second topic would be crypto assets, which is probably rather new, but has grown its significance. And it is issues like these that appear and that should be tested really against our literature and being monitored, not necessarily being put onto our agenda straight away, but being monitored, digested, and assessed against the existing literature to see whether there may be any need of future standard setting in order to abridge the time that is needed and get resources ready and up and running should the board decide at some stage to actually engage in a research or even a standard setting project. So be proactive, be even more proactive, and scan the horizon continuously. The second bit this council has had discussions on, and I think you will be seeing more of that in one of the next sessions to come in the Advisory Council, new ways of digesting financial and other information. The impact of digital and the impact on digital is something that we are quite determined at the IASB, and we know that this will be an issue for the ISSB as well, as the trustees had set out the strategy of the new board being available to deliver digitally on from day one. So not do the same thing as we've done at the IASB, start on paper and then consider the digital version much, much later, but do both in conjunction. And I think we are quite determined in even taking that a step further, because digital so far has been equated with having an XBRL taxonomy, which of course is a very important ingredient, but is not the same as digital. So I think we want to explore and consider more how we can help users digest information in the digital era, what our contribution could be to the financial ecosystem in that regard. And we will factor time for that when we make our decisions as to the new work plan. Sustainability reporting developments, many of you have urged us to go hand in hand on issues that are of equal concern to both the IASB and the ISSB. Management commentary is an area that has often come up. intangible assets has been mentioned by quite a few constituents when it comes to doing joined up standard setting. And surely there are areas in our literature where we may leap into the pond of the ISSB. And what we want to make sure is that we don't create overlap that has frictions. We don't want to see any gaps remaining, but we really want to make sure that at the interface where our reporting stops and the reporting of the ISSB continues, there is seamless reporting for the benefit of users. And to do that, obviously, you have to do quite a bit of backlog work. We have started on our side with the first considerations, but this is certainly an area that we will be devoting more time to, and I'm pretty sure that Bill will be scheduling time on this council to discuss this issue of working together, having joined up standard setting and looking into connected standard setting. My last point there is communication is key. That sounds very simple, but in effect, it's actually not so so easy at some times. And Erki has just alluded to one topic, being the finding the right acronyms and the right spelling for that. So always think about translation, which is part of communication. But I think we ought to always put ourselves into those that are not as close to the scene as we are. So some issues seem to be absolutely natural and normal. And we sometimes forget that we actually do have a bit of a communication and education effort to do. So we have to explain always what we are doing, why we are doing, and take the recipient's perspective and not just the sender's perspective when we think about communication. I think that's very key. And that should not be taken as me criticizing the communication of the ISSB in anything. It's more as to where do I think we could even be better and should always be sensitive as we progress and go along. If I then turn back to the lower part of the slide, I already said that we do have an ongoing work program and we are committed to actually finalizing that work program. There are some quite big chunks on there. If I think about business combinations under common control, if I think about primary financial statements, if I think about goodwill and impairment or the revision of the SME standard, to just name a few. This will take time, and it will also inform our stakeholders as to how many more projects we could actually add to our work program without jeopardizing finalization of the current work program. And as said, I'm quite determined to get things delivered within the next 5-year period. So don't be surprised if we add topics to our agenda, but put them in a pipeline for the time being and only pull them forward once we do have new resources available. That automatically then leads into my second bullet there, be realistic of what can be achieved by when. Sorry, could we just, thank you. The ISSB does have limited resources. We do have quite a few resources, of course, if you compare that with national standard setters, but still limited and probably too few in order to deal with all the issues that people want us to spend our resources on. So be mindful, there is a limited amount. We do have to go through a prioritization, and our board will be starting its redeliberations of the agenda consultation this month, actually next week. And we anticipate that we will continue doing so up until January, probably February next year, and make hardwired decisions in February or March next year and finalize then our work plan for 2022 to 2026. As part of that, one consideration that has been flagged to us loud and clear is that we need to be cognizant about the frequency and the amount of changes that we are imposing on our stakeholders. There is certainly something that is labelled standard setting fatigue, particularly on the part of the preparers who had to bear a huge load with the big changes having to be implemented, and also with the amount of consultations that we have placed on all stakeholders over the past 18 months during the pandemic. And we are absolutely mindful and appreciative of the feedback and the amount of time that you've spent in actually informing us of your views. Now, that's not to say don't expect us to actually close the door and throw the keys away, but rest assured that before we actually put out any final new product, it will take some time for us to finalize the existing consultations. Don't expect a huge amount of new consultations coming up. There are just a few minor ones, but no big ones coming up. And there will be a time where we will be spending much of our board time to re-deliberate the proposals. We are also mindful that we do have an overlap probably with the work of the ISSB in a different dimension, and that is if the ISSB starts producing consultation documents, there is an expectation in the market that has been flagged to us that these consultation documents will probably end up with exactly the same stakeholders that currently respond to the ISSB consultation projects. So we need to factor that in as to how much we could actually place on you by not just looking on our work program, but at the same time liaising with our sister board and taking into account the amount of consultation that they are about to launch. And we will be duly factoring that in. Lastly, and I already alluded to that, the issue of timeliness is something that we will always factor in. It will always be a balancing act of keeping the balance right between urgency or timeliness on the one hand side and good quality. And what is really key for me is we don't cut corners. We take due process very seriously. That's what the ISSB is standing for, and we surely do not want to tinker with that. So can I then ask you to go to the next slide, please? Just a summary of the significant developments that have happened since the last meeting, and Bill has already said that the last meeting wasn't so long ago. So we put out one consultation document, which actually starts the post-implementation review of IFRS 9, the standard on financial instrument that kicked in 2018 for the majority of the entities. I should say that this is only the beginning of the consultation, because we decided to separate the post-implementation review on IFRS 9 into stages by looking into classification and measurement first and adjacent disclosures, and looking at a post-implementation review for the hedge accounting requirements and the impairment model a bit later. We will do it. Don't worry if you don't see it in this document. That was done on purpose because we believe that we have received some questions from the market that should warrant probably upfront consultation, which is why we pulled forward the post-implementation review on the first phase of IFRS 9. That has received a 120-day comment period, is currently out, and I'll have a slide for that later on, just quickly. You see that some consultations have ended, and these allude to some of the heavy lifting consultations that I have spoken about. So business combinations under common control, a minor one, the exposure draft on the lack of exchangeability, yet even shorter one, the initial application of IFRS 17 and 9, the comparative information. We aim to provide a final amendment in December. We are in the last stages of actually doing the balloting on that. So be prepared to see the final amendment coming out. And then obviously the third agenda consultation that has drawn to a close by the end of September. In September, we have hosted our annual Festival of Accounting, as we call it. The last week of September is always devoted to quite a few outreach meetings. We gather with our friends at the National Standards Centers in an event we call the World Standards Centers Conference. We had more than 140 delegates from about 70 jurisdictions, so quite a good turnout, actually. It was regrettable, as with any other consultations and outreach events, that we could only do that in a virtual space, but we are quite hopeful that we can go back to meeting in person from next year on. We continued to engage in the trustee sustainability work in order to think about connectivity. I already spoken about that, but this obviously is work in progress, and we can only finalize that once we do have our system board up and running, and once we do have our colleagues on the other side to share views and information about what is it that we do mean in that regard. We have officially reopened our office with a pilot hybrid work approach. We are considering currently how well that is working, but it should be of interest to you to say that we have actually got back to in-person ISB meetings. We've started that in September, and we will now be having our third meeting next week with all our board members present. And I can tell you it's quite a difference from talking to your screen and really talking to living people. With that, can we turn to the next slide, please? So just briefly of where we are with our current consultations and what to expect for the remainder of the year. We do have three bigger consultations still ongoing: the targeted standards level review of disclosures, which is a new approach to how the ISB might set disclosure requirements, starting from a disclosure objective and starting a principles-based approach, and trying our utmost to go away from a shopping list. An entity shall disclose as a minimum, and then you have 100 and or so more requirements to fulfill. Feedback so far has been mixed. I think the majority of people have acknowledged and have actually appreciated our approach to there being a principles-based approach and there being a disclosure objective. But when you then put it into practice, it may be that there are some speed bumps along the way when it comes to how do I assess whether something is material or significant for reporting from an entity perspective, and could there be potentially clashes with how an entity as a preparer sees that and how the audit profession who's next in line with the reporting chain sees that. And we have received some high-level feedback from the audit profession that there are probably some refinements needed should the ISB come to the conclusion that this approach is the one to follow. Management commentary, it's coming to a close shortly. I should remind everyone that management commentary started out as an ISB-only project, not with a view in complete neglect and disregard of there being a sister board, but really with a view of updating a practice statement that was seen as completely out of tune and out of date. So the primary objective for the ISB when it started its work was really to bring the practice statement up to today's development. Now, that obviously was somewhat superseded then by the developments around the ISSB creation, by upfront work that has been done by the TRWG on the climate prototype and the presentation prototype standards. And I think from our perspective, there is an understanding that management commentary might be a prime candidate where we might test how we go about connected and joined up standard setting together with the ISSB. Whether this will be the prime objective of the other board and whether it will be the utmost priority for the new board, next to finalizing work on the climate prototype and the presentation standard and probably carrying out an agenda consultation, we would have to see and discuss with our colleagues once they are there. Disclosure initiatives and series without public accountability disclosures is actually there to facilitate the preparation of accounts of some SMEs who report into a parent company who is an applier of full IFRSs, and trying to help them in order not to have two sets of accounts ready, one following full GAAP in order to comply with group accounting standards, and one following the IFRS for SME standards for standalone numbers. The board is proposing to give those subsidiaries that are SMEs relief by pulling over some of the amounts that have been reported to the parent for it to prepare its group consolidated financial statements, for those numbers to appear in the standalone SME accounts with SME disclosures. And we have so far heard quite good feedback on that. There are remaining questions of have we gotten the scope right, but by and large, I think it is appreciated that this will surely be of help for those that apply the IFRS for SME standard. Now, the post-implementation review of IFRS 9, I briefly mentioned, and we do have, I think, a follow-up slide, so I park that for the moment. We have two further consultations as, that are coming shortly, which both relate to work of the IFRS Interpretations Committee, being supply fine finance arrangements and classification of debt of covenants. No major issues, changes to the literatures, but a provision of a number of new disclosure requirements. And we do have slides for that as well. So Jenny, can I ask you to turn the slide to the next, please, to briefly run you through these three projects. So the post-implementation review of IFRS 9 classification and measurement I've already outlined is the first phase in the IFRS 9 PIR that's upcoming. We have done a little bit of background research as to potential topics where the board should seek feedback from constituents. These relate around the core ideas of IFRS 9 classification and measurement models, so the SPPI test, the business model, the fair value changes in equity instruments. These are the topics that you can see down in the bottom as number one. As far as the accounting for financial instruments on the liability side is concerned, we haven't invoked much changes. One change that has been invoked related to the presentation of own credit gains and losses. There was a change already done as part of the response to the financial crisis. And then the third one relates to issues that we have heard probably more recently, modifications to contractual cash flows, the effective interest rate method, and the transition to IFRS 9, all of which we seek some feedback on. I may mention one issue in particular that you can't see from the slide, but which is embedded in the SPPI notion. There is a discussion in that document about instruments that have ESG features. And the board is really wanting to seek feedback on these instruments, which seem to be significant in the market. And surely we do not want to miss the train. And if there is anything that creates frictions between our existing literature and the rise of these new instruments, we want to seek as much information as is possible to then consider whether or not standard setting may be warranted. We can turn to the next slide, please. So supplier finance arrangements is a new term that the ISB has coined as a placeholder to encompass all sorts of finance arrangements that come under the name of supply chain financing or reverse factoring or may have other names. It is really a tripartite arrangement between a bank, a supplier, and the entity. And the question is, how can we make more transparent what is happening in an entity's financing arrangement? Because currently it seems that users of financial statements can't really detect that supply chain financing is going on at all, let alone under which terms. So the board is proposing to provide some extra disclosures where entities are asked if they are engaging in supplier finance arrangements, what the type of arrangement is that they have engaged in, to also let users know what the key criteria or key characteristics of those arrangements. And we have added some example disclosures both to IAS 1 and to IFRS 7. The exposure draft is expected, I think, next week. So watch out for that. It will be coming in November, and it will come with the ordinary 120 days comment period. The other area that is coming out of the IFRIC discussions, we can turn to the next slide, is classification of debt with covenants. You may recall that the IASB has produced an amendment to IAS 1 just last year. And after that, our staff did some outreach because it was given notice that there may have been some misunderstandings in the market as to what the new requirements would actually require to be presented. And it concerned particularly arrangements where debt came with covenants, but the covenant didn't have to be tested under the legal arrangement as at the reporting date, but sometime after the end of the reporting period. And the question was asked as to, does the accounting and does the presentation that the amendment of 2020 would require entities to adhere to actually make sense and be perceived as decision useful by users of financial statements? And we have heard quite some criticisms in that regard. And this amendment that you see on this slide is trying to address these concerns. So basically what the board is now saying is, if you have debt with covenants, but the covenant legally has to be tested only some time after the end of the reporting period, you continue to present the debt as long-term, as non-current, and don't change it to current. So that is the basic thrust of that. You see the approach here. You see some further wording and clarification to that. That proposal will come out by the end of this month as well, and will have 120-day comment period. So that is about what you're going to see in terms of consultation, new consultation up until the rest of the year. I hope that I can promise to you that there won't be any other consultations that we will be launching unless there's something that urgently burning, but I think that's about it. I shall stop here. In the appendix, you do have some further updates about our big projects and what we have decided over the recent months. So please ask any questions and now open it up for comments. Over to you, Bill. Thank you.
Andreas, thank you very much. I love these slide decks. They are a tremendous amount of information, including the annexes. All right, so the floor is open for questions, comments, reactions. As a reminder, please, everyone, while you're not speaking, could you mute your computer? Okay. Who would like the floor? And remember, let's start with Bi-Ling. Good day, Bi-Ling. Remember, everyone, if you'd like the floor, just use the chat room, which on my computer is the lower left-hand corner. Bi-Ling, over to you, please.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Andreas, for the very insightful presentation. On slide two about limited resources, I'm just thinking whether the ISB may wish to consider leveraging resources from other areas, such as the national sales centers that are national sales centers that are more well resourced. For example, they could work on the initial research for specific project for the ISB. Thank you.
Bill, thank you. Do you want to collect certain questions and I respond to them afterwards, or should I go straight?
Let's see, Andreas. I think why don't we collect the questions? We'll hear comments, and then I'll turn back to you.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you for that, Bi-Ling. Osman, good day. The floor is yours.
Thank thank you. And thank you, Andreas, for that helpful slide deck and presentation. Again, also on slide two, I liked what you said with regard to horizon scanning and kind of use the phrase kind of mega topics. I just want to get your thoughts, perhaps it relates to Bilang's question as well, with regard to kind of things like cryptocurrencies or crypto assets and accounting for those and perhaps identified as a mega topic. I mean, taking into account kind of the importance of due process and deliberation and stuff, sometimes it can feel a bit slow and resources, as you say, can be constrained. But I mean, if we were to take a concrete example, and maybe it's too early to ask, but that crypto assets, I mean, if it was decided to be something that the board should act upon, I mean, it would take a period of years, right? It wouldn't be months. And you know, would that actually be helpful or not? I guess is an open question. Whether you have any views on that would be helpful to understand.
Thank you, Osman. Isabel, you have the floor.
Thank you. Similarly, also on slide two, so I noted the topics, you know, about scanning the horizon, being able to react in a timely manner, the issue of resources and the need also to have proper due process. And I'll put, I mean, I really welcome the notion of scanning the horizon and reacting in a timely manner. Also because from a regulator's perspective, I mean, the issues are there, you know, so until there's a solution, you know, who do issuers and auditors turn to? And in that regard also, be cognizant of endorsement processes. Andreas, you would obviously know what I mean, because I mean we've been confronted as ESMA with, you know, this is not endorsed, and so therefore you know, can you sort of lift through the existing requirements for the new ones? And it's very difficult for us to be in that capacity to do that because that's legislation, and we're not the legislator. Also in terms of the what you mentioned regarding digital consumption, and you focused on how you, investors or users would consume the information, but I think it would also be very useful for you potentially on how you would consume the information, you know, for post-implementation reviews, for questions coming to the interpretations committee. And it's also certainly something that we're going to be looking at in terms of as regulators, as how that informs our enforcement processes. And finally, a comment on liaising with the ISSB on the consultation, and maybe what you'll find in the next couple of years is because there's probably going to be a lot coming out from the ISSB, you know, maybe just a word of caution that shouldn't prevent you from reacting timely. that you may find that there's some pressure points there. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabel. Okay, let's hear from Vijay, and then we'll hear from Maria Angelis.
Hi, Bill. Thank you. Andreas, thanks for the wonderful presentation. I just have two comments, but before that, on slide two, I want to compliment you for making this bold statement that a new chair does not mean a new work plan. Sincerely appreciate that consistency and message to all the stakeholders. And on slide four, I want to compliment the board for having been extremely responsive to the feedback on classification on debt with covenants and proposing the change. In fact, it requires a lot of courageous leadership to make that kind of a change, and I want to compliment the members of the board. So, Andreas, as far as the advisory council is concerned, I would request that in the future presentations of the IASB chair, we can have a placeholder, we can have update on one IFRS for SME. If there is zero update, let it be zero. But I think IFRS for SME is an important product of IASB, and we just need to have some update on that. For example, we just had the comprehensive review paper. And personally, I'm keen that at IASB, we should engage with regulators across various jurisdictions for them to embrace the IFRS for SME product. So I'd just like to have that as a placeholder and update item. Second, similar placeholder update item, even if it is nil, is the joint project with FASB. So what is the extent of dialogue happening? If it is zero, let it be zero. But it's important that as an advisory council, we have an update of either action happening or no action happening. The last one similar is regarding the IFRS taxonomy, because we are looking at in making information available digitally so that people can consume more of digital financial reporting. So on that also, whatever initiatives, I would request three placeholders as a standard part of your presentations. Thanks, Andreas, once again for the wonderful update.
Thank you, Vijay. Okay, let's hear from Maria Angeles and then Javier.
Hi, thank you, Bill. And thank you, Andreas, for your clear presentation. I have a comment on the post-implementation review of IFRS 9 in connection with the future sustainability standards, because well, banking industry, we all know that it's key when it comes to channeling the financial, the sustainability financing. Currently, what we feel is that a real confusion regarding how to interpret, how to understand the SPP test on loans that have ESG clauses. So many external auditors are now interpreting this in a different way. So this is, at the end of the day, an asymmetric treatment between entities. That on around all of this, it could be a good opportunity to connect the post-implementation review of IFRS 9 with the expertise of the new sustainability standards, because given the relevance that the supporting sustainability financing for banks and the whole economic system, it would be highly desirable to advance in this interpretation as soon as possible. Maybe this is a good chance to do in that way, in that new way. That's my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Javier, over to you, and then we'll hear from David Grunberg.
Yeah, Javier. Hi. Thank you, Bill. Okay, Andreas, I'm going to repeat what everybody have said. Thank you very much for your comments, the comprehensive comments. But at the same time, I have to say, going to the specific points that you've been addressing. Now, I think you mentioned 2 points, the communication. I completely agree with you. Communication is key, and particularly looking from the recipient's perspective. So that's really very important. And I completely agree that you continue with the current plan. And I think we have discussed that in the past, that be very careful introducing new topics here. So I completely agree with that. But in addition, I would like to ask you on the deliberations of the board, the current deliberation of the board. Can you mention a little bit where the board is standing regarding the goodwill and improvements in that sense?
Thank you, Javier. Thank you. Okay, David, the floor is yours, and after David, we will hear from Thorsten. David, please.
Yes, thank you, Bill, Andreas. Also, my compliments for this very clear and practice-oriented and pragmatic solutions and program that you have presented. And I thought, and my impression was a bit on how the long horizon or the broad horizon perspective and investigation relates to the concrete topics, like, for example, in intangibles, or what we just heard in impairment, yeah, of goodwill. I think those you may make use of combining both in a certain way. Let me explain. Like, there's a reason why intangible accounting is so difficult to solve, because it's very difficult to find a solution that fits all information needs of different groups and stakeholders. The same is probably true for goodwill impairment, where, you know, this decade-long debate that we have all experienced on those topics. And on the other hand, you have the broad horizon topics, like, for example, digitalization, which allows you to maybe move a little bit away from this very deterministic normative accounting standard setting, balance sheet oriented. One value describes an asset as a singular notion of a value, because through digitalization you can open up the spectrum away from this very deterministic way of presenting information to a broader way, yeah, showing information from different perspectives to investors and allow them to analyze based on their preference which perspective they want to actually use, yeah, and apply to a firm. Yeah, when analyzing the capabilities, financial resources, and the like. So I think if you try to tackle maybe different aspects, long horizon topics, together with the very concrete topics that are on the agenda, like intangibles, goodwill impairment, yeah, and try to integrate them, maybe incorporating a broader horizon on what financial information could deliver in the future, yeah, with other means of technology and more information being delivered at the same time, you may, yeah, be more successful in bridging some of the contradictions and the disputes and serve the information needs even better. So that would be my reaction on that.
Good. Well said, David. Thank you very much. Torsten, over to you, and then we'll hear from Martin.
Yes, thank you, Bill. And I want to echo everybody's commendations to Andreas. Thanks from me as well. I have one question and a comment related to Isabel's comment earlier on the interaction of the ISB with the ISSB going forward. And I was interested to read in the climate prototype that the Technical Readiness Working Group has published last week in Section 9 on the financial materiality. That clearly, of course, the company will have to describe to what extent it expects climate-related risks and opportunities to affect the financial position, performance, and outlook. I'm wondering, does the ISB expect consequential ISB guidance, standard-setting activity based on these kinds of explicit linkages or references to financial performance in the ISSB standards? So will there be follow-on projects that will be triggered by the ISSB requiring certain information related to financial matters? So that would be my question. And then secondly, I also listened very carefully when you talked about scanning the horizon and the resource constraints. That is clearly a very important consideration. I fully agree with what you said. In that context, there is going to be in December, as most of you will know, the Information for Better Markets conference, again organized by the ICAEW. And the topic this year is, does every accounting issue need a solution, or the too difficult box? So the idea there is that although there might be accounting issues that have no standard and no agreed upon solution under GAAP or under IFRS yet, this might not actually be needed in all cases, because sometimes the market will find a solution, or there might be advantages to leaving an accounting issue unresolved. Just as a side note, maybe that's something to look into when that conference takes place. Thank you.
Good point. Thank you, Torsten. Martin, over to you, and then we'll hear from David Madden.
Yeah, thanks, Andreas. And I regret that your list is getting longer and longer for all the answers. So I have additional 4 points or comments. So the first is I very welcome that the intangible assets are now on the list. And beside of the topic of goodwill and the link towards goodwill accounting, it might also be a link towards non-financial information, because also non-financial information or activities can create significant intangible value. Whether it's an asset or not, it's something different, but there might be also some link. A question what I have is with the withdrawal of the pension benefit depending on asset return, project, does that mean that over the next 5 years or so, we should not expect, say, any changes with regard to pension accounting? Because it's also clear that the board need to focus on relevant projects, but it would be interesting to hear whether there are any activities foreseen or not. Then a quite general question. This is on the feedback on the consultation. So with all the developments we see with all constituents and so on, and also in the area of ESG and so on and so on and so on, is there a tendency that you get less feedback on the consultation, so that there should be more kind of different approach, or is it still constant and okay? And the last question or remark is, you said that there is the intention also to scan the horizon for upcoming topics, and there the question whether there is to some extent already inflation or inflation accounting on the radar screen. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Martin. David, let's hear from you. David is sitting in today for Russell Guthrie. Hi, David. Floor is yours. David, you might be on mute. David, we're going to come back to you in just a moment. Next, we'll hear from Tanya. Hello, Tanya.
Good afternoon or evening, everyone. Bill, thank you for the floor. I'm not sure if it's a comment or a question, but it's really this convergence from a strategic perspective in terms of the agenda that the ISB will be taking on over its the course of its next period, together with this desire to ensure that there's a close working with the IWSB. And I guess when the agenda consultation project started, many of us might not have envisaged that we would be in the space we are at the moment now. And I'm not sure, as I say, if it's a question or comment to discuss now in our January session, but to really ensure that there is a focus on this convergence, and particularly this interplay between ESG-related issues, which will fall more firmly within the ISSB's ambit versus the IASB, a topic or a point in sort of as an example, might be around the likes of financial instruments or bonds with ESG-related elements, whether it be triggers, whether it be exposure to those sorts of projects. And I just think it would be useful to have identified those sorts of overlaps in advance and to see to what extent the boards are going to work together, whether it be in the context of small amendments from an ISB perspective, or whether it's in a project that would sit entirely within the IWSB. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Tanya. Let's go back to David Madden, who is our IFAC colleague today. David, would you like the floor? We might be having technical difficulties, so I will turn to Martin Boss. Hello,
well, thank you. Thank you, Bill. I'd like to make a comment on the remarks of Andreas on intangible assets. I, from the way it was phrased, it's not very clear how ambitious this project is. And maybe from my perspective, a bit of caution on at least not trying to bridge the gap between the book value of equity and the observed market value, because a lot of discussion about intangibles is coming from a perceived problem that results from a gap between the market value and the book value. And this is not really what investors are looking for the ISB to be fixed. And I do think there's room for improvement in how the current goodwill accounting can be improved by getting rid of the acquisition-related intangibles other than goodwill, but there is room for improvement, but not so much in bridging the gap between market value and book value. And maybe on the management commentary, I just wonder, it appears from my perspective that the best that the IASB could do on management commentary is indeed produce a practice statement, whereas the ISSB may actually be able to set standards. And I wonder if that will play a role in who will in the end take the lead on this important project. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Andreas, before I give you the floor, I will. I'm going to give the floor to Leslie, and then we'll go back to David. But Leslie first, please. Good morning.
Good morning. So thank you, Andreas, for the update. So I always enjoy the technical updates and the detail because it helps in our role as to liaise with the rest of our membership. So I do appreciate that. But I also think, too, the strategy of the advisory committee and our remit, which is to the strategy of the board. And on slide two, when you talk about resources, I know that resources are not infinite, but I keep hearing things that indicate that we need more resources. So, for example, I'll echo Tanya's comment about the interlock between the ISSB and the and the financial board. And I think we can foresee, scanning the horizon, that there's a need for a permanent connector there. It's hard to imagine a single standard that the ISSB would pass that isn't going to relate to the finances of the company, because the scope that we've defined is on enterprise value. And so it seems that every standard issued is going to have to be reviewed, and that we need to set up in architecture or a mechanism for consistent review of all standards, that it's not going to happen on an ad hoc basis. And so I'm wondering what sort of structural revisions are in place, which would probably require additional resources. So sorry if my thoughts are not altogether organized, but with my own organization, we say, okay, is this a cost issue or is it a revenue challenge? And that maybe dealing with the resource issue should be top line. We should be focusing on the top line because the scope of both boards has expanded dramatically. So thank you.
Good comment, Leslie. Thank you very much. David, over to you.
We'll try a third time.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, perfect. Sorry for the technical difficulties. So thank you, Andreas, as everyone else, for the presentation. I had a general remark and then a question. So the general remark was, I very much appreciated your comments about achieving balance, right? Being more responsive, but balanced with quality and due process, more responsive, but balanced with the ability of companies and repairs implement. It was especially important to IFAC, the balance between the work of the IASB and the work of the new ISSB, and that preparers will have to be dealing with, hopefully, adopting standards from the ISSB. And how do you, you know, put both of those activities through the pipe effectively? You also talked about connectivity and the connectivity between the boards. And I think there's a balance to be done here as well. I think what was so impressive about last week's announcements from IFAC's perspective was the two prototype documents that were released, and that they leveraged the work of the existing sustainability-related initiatives. And that has to be kind of the model, I think, going forward for the speed of work of the new ISSB. So, you know, the connectivity is important, but connectivity cannot slow down the pace of what's required for climate and other sustainability issues. So I think that's a new balance and challenge as well. And then the question, more specific question, ties in on that. Someone's already mentioned climate reporting. And I don't mean climate reporting with respect to the ISSB, but climate reporting as what would be required under the IASB. So that has become a topic, a very topical issue and challenge, frankly, for the accountancy profession, as recent investor groups have been calling for more scenario analysis on the part of companies. And in some cases, you know, suggesting that the audit community is an enforcer of scenario analysis, the use of it and what it means. So we're appreciating the educational information that was put out a year ago. I don't know if the board or you have any thoughts about what more could maybe be done to address this issue with respect to current 2021-2022 financial reporting disclosure. Thank you.
David, thank you. Andreas, I'll give you the floor in a second. Thanks to all the advisory council members. Those were really good comments, good feedback, questions. Andreas covered a lot of ground in his slide deck. Scanning the horizon, the digital consumption of reporting, the sustainability issue, of course, the communications, such an important role for the board, both boards, the standard setting fatigue, the resources issue, execution timeliness, a lot of ground Andreas covered. A lot of the, Andreas, I'll ask you to comment on some of the on the issues that members raised, but this one issue that capped off by David's comment, Leslie and others, this dynamic between IASB and the ISSB is so important, as is the role that we as the advisory council play in that dynamic and the connectivity between the two. So this is clearly something we will need to focus on. You know, the nuances of that relationship and our role in supporting both of the boards. So this is something that will necessarily evolve over time. But it is an important aspect for us in providing both of the boards with strategic advice. Andreas, you covered a lot of ground, and so did advisory council members. The floor is yours. Good luck.
Thank you indeed. I set a timer to 9.5 minutes, so I try to finish off as many questions and comments as I've received. So firstly, in terms of resources, this has come up by both Bieling and also by Leslie and to a certain degree by Tanya. I think surely we are looking into how much we can done and how much we can do and how much can be done by let others help us in pursuing our work. I think where the natural cutoff point is where our independence might be hampered. And I think this is something that we take quite seriously. Obviously, whenever you do upfront research, that probably shouldn't be any constraint to any of us. Likewise, any information on, say, outreaches and post-implementation reviews, I think are very much appreciated already. But if you think about joint up standard setting in a similar way that the IASB had engaged with the FASB under the Convergence project, I am, shall we say, more skeptical how much can be done to that end. So just to set expectations, yes, we can certainly leverage off some of our information and research needs to third parties, but we have to be mindful that in the end, the decision making needs to stay with the independent board, and obviously we need to be mindful in that regard. Osman, your question on cryptos, I would answer probably similar to Martin's question on intangibles. Firstly, on cryptos, I don't think particularly that only because cryptos are new that requires a standard. I think what I'm really keen to is first to understand what the different natures of the different cryptos are, to then see where we do have literature available. So if there is a crypto that's akin to inventory, we do have a standard on inventory. If there is one that's akin to a financial instrument, can the financial instrument literature provide meaningful answers? If something is intangible, can it provide meaningful answers? To then see, firstly, are there gaps? And secondly, are there particular answers that do seem counterintuitive and do not really provide much sense? And only in these areas, I think we should probably put them on a list and say that potentially warrants standard setting. But that is not to say let's start standard setting, but really let's prioritize and let's see where the relative importance of cryptos is vis-a-vis all the other issues that people have flagged to us as requiring attention. Isabel, be mindful of endorsement. Yeah, you're talking to the right person. I'm completely aware of that, and I'm cognizant of that. I think as much probably can be done through other means, maybe by putting out education guidance, by probably just communicating of what is already in existing literature, as we have done with climate-related risks that David has just mentioned. I think this was perceived quite helpful, and I think we didn't have to change our standard at that time. We just put forward these education guidance. But when I said scanning the horizons, I think that is not only one thing that we should be doing alone, but where we can actually also draw on the expertise of others. If I think about a research lab like the FRC that's doing first-hand research, if I think about the Economist Intelligence Unit, there are other sources already available that we can draw from. The extra bit that we need to do is, okay, here's a trend that's unfolding. Could that have any implications for financial reporting? And if the answer is yes, then keep it on the watch list and monitor it. Don't wait until the problem hits, but really be upfront there and be cognizant of potential action needed. BJ, your points are appreciated. The update for the RFS for SMEs and the taxonomy will do. On the joint projects with FASB, I can be very quick because currently there are none. So we have finalized our convergence program with FASB. If you're referring particularly to goodwill and impairment, this is not a convergence project in the old sense. It is that both boards, independently of each other, have launched a post-implementation review and have agreed that we should liaise as much as is possible and inform each other of where in the process of digesting that feedback and reaching decisions we are. This may look as if this was a joint project, but actually I just caution you, this is not a joint project. We don't have joint decision-making, widely or wrongly. Maria Angeles, your points about IFRS 9 and links with ESG features are well spotted. I'm not too sure, however, how much that really falls into the ISSB's remit. And that also talks perhaps to Leslie's point as to potential structural changes that we could see. My view of that would be the remit of the ISSB to set sustainability disclosure standards. They are not setting recognition and measurement standards. I think that will always be the remit of the IASB. Now, that's not to say that there is a clear division, because the IASB might also set disclosure requirements, and the ISSB might set disclosure requirements that have or could have an implication on some of our existing literature or some literature that we are about to develop. And surely we would be mindful. I don't envisage that it will be the entire literature, but it will certainly be quite a few of those. If we think about IFRS 5 and stranded assets, if we think about the issue of intangibles, Martin, you've mentioned that, and I take your point serious. There is certainly an issue that we need to look at. IS 38 is quite an old standard, has never been revisited. It was drafted for a significant purpose at that point in time, but I think it has not really stood the test of time, which is why I'm keen to actually revisit it. Not by bringing all the intangibles onto the balance sheet, that's probably a far-reaching aim, but to increase transparency about what are the key value drivers that are there that have an influence of cash flow generation going forward. So it's probably more of updating our existing literature and providing more clarity around what type of intangible/intellectual capital do you have in order to inform people when making assessments about the future cash generation potential. Javier, goodwill and impairment, yeah, well, I'll be there. We are currently progressing with thinking about a set of disclosures. So what we have said is our work on goodwill and impairment probably falls into two parts. One is devoted to the subsequent reporting of goodwill, and one is devoted towards setting useful disclosures for investors. Because if you look at our business combination accounting, we are talking a lot about that goodwill figure that we have heard nobody really cares about. Nobody really cares about whether you amortize, whether you impair, because it's coming too late anyway, it's being backed out, what have you. But the most simple question is hardly being answered. Was this acquisition a success, yes or no? And we try to bring forward some disclosures that would actually talk to the subsequent performance of the acquired business, not by asking companies to go completely naked and run tremendous competition and legal risk, but to probably think about bringing into the financial statements information that CFOs currently are already providing the public with, if you think about investor roadshows, analyst conferences, press releases, everything that's being regulated by us. So we are thinking more along those lines and making business combination accounting a coherent set of information, and only after turn to the question of should we revisit our tentative discussion around decision around subsequent accounting of goodwill. David, in terms of thinking of linking up different projects and making them being viewed holistically, I hear you. I would caution you a little bit. I think it may be a wise idea, but if you think of it from a program management perspective, it could be something that we are bound to highly overpromise and highly underdeliver, because the project just grows too big. Likelihood is that you will never deliver anything. So whilst I agree with you that we probably need to think about links that exist between the different projects, and we do that already with our current stream of projects, I would caution us of actually linking them all up and meshing them together, because then it has the likelihood of never seeing the light of the day. Torsten, consequential amendments at the ISB or by ISSB pronouncements. I've just talked about some things where I could see that probably there may be issues where we might be revisiting our literature, but I wouldn't expect that each and every pronouncement that the ISSB puts forward requires a consequential change in our literature. Why is that? I think the majority of our disclosure requirements are tied to numbers that are in the financial statements. They are explanatory. Where we do give extra information outside of the primary financial statements, this may be an area where if the ISSB puts forward guidance, we want to make sure that actually it's a coherent stream of information, that there are no gaps, no overlaps, and more important, no conflicting messages to be put forward.
Thank you.
Martin, quickly, no change to pension accounting. It's too early to say. The board hasn't made any decisions yet. I think we will prioritize the request for looking into employee benefit accounting. What I can truly say you at this stage, because the papers have already been uploaded for our board meeting, is this wasn't an A prime topic. That was on each and everyone's agenda. So it seems that employee benefits do not rank highly by the majority of our stakeholders. Now, I should remind everyone that an agenda consultation is not a beauty contest. We are not asking for the highest amounts of hits, and that will automatically be listed. But I think it is surely a project that would require quite a few resources, and we should be very mindful whether we spend our resources rightly if we embarked on that one. Same goes for inflation accounting, I think. The amount of feedback changing, I would think no. So we haven't so far received a huge drain. On the contrary, I think, especially with the extension of the common periods that we have provided to our stakeholders, I think we have probably seen a fairly stable amount of feedback. It all depends on the issues. So for some of the issues like rate-regulated activities or extractive industries, you would assume that the majority of the feedback comes from participants in those particular industries and not from the general user or the general audit community. Tanya, agenda setting in view of the ISSB, we hear you. It's probably easier said than done, because the problem is, as long as the siblings has been announced but is not yet in operation, it's quite difficult to actually pin down where exactly we could envisage working together. And my expectation would be that, say, for the remainder of 2022, when the board is actually coming together and it's being formed, I could foresee that they will be quite occupied with getting the climate prototype and the presentation standard out of the door. These will certainly be the prime priority areas for them, as well as launching an agenda consultation. Whether any of our projects, be it management commentary, be it intangibles, that I could foresee leap into the other arena will be picked up shortly, to say at this stage, I think. We are considering that, we are watching it, we are certainly setting resources aside, but we are not keeping a storage house of resources just in case something could happen. So we are mindful, but we certainly have to see how soon actually our resources might be deployed in areas of joined up standard setting, but we are mindful of that. Martin, shortly with the management commentary, practice statement versus standard. I think I've been on public record when I was still a member of the management commentary consultative group that I have a strong flavor for making management commentary a mandatory standard. Whether it's feasible in the regulatory background, we will have to see. Quite a few jurisdictions are there where there are legal requirements around management commentary, and we are trotting well into regulatory and enforcement space. But on the other hand, to me, it seems somewhat inconceivable to say we set up a board that would set sustainability disclosure standards, and we want more uniformity and more coherence and cohesiveness. Yet at the same time, people are saying, I want to retain my autonomy when it comes to management commentary or management discussion and analysis. I think you have to die one death, and you really have to make up, do you giving authority to one body that sets the global baseline on which you can always top up if you feel the need of going extra miles. But I think if you're really serious about the global baseline, then I think the question of should this retain its voluntary status or should it be made mandatory is certainly an issue that will have to be considered. And I think it will have to be considered both from an ISSB perspective as part of their literature, as it will have to be considered as part of the IASB literature. Then lastly, I know that I've already overrun, so apologies, Bill, but I try to be to do justice to everyone who has commented. I'm very grateful for these comments. On David's question regarding climate reporting under IASB, we have heard the concerns being flagged by the auditor community. I must say, I'm prepared to push back a little bit on that. And it's not that I'm heavily disagreeing with you, but I think we all ought to ask ourselves how serious we are in terms of principle-based standard setting. So now it is climate reporting in relation to, is something material? Is something requiring significant uncertainty and judicious decision-making? Tomorrow it will be water, biodiversity, gender inequality, you name it. Is there a view that we will be opening up our standard every time that an application issue arises? I think at some stage we probably have to pull back and seriously ask ourselves if we are all friends of principle-based standard setting. A principle has to be there, it has to be robust. Can the rest be provided by means of education guidance? And only if we think that it's clearly insufficient, we need to change the literature, then try to be surgical in the sense of try to beef up our literature, but not particularly for that topical area, but more from a perspective of how can we make sure that actually just all the different areas that are ahead of us. So I would think that for climate reporting, I think our education literature was really perceived well. The fact that we say entities are encouraged to look into this, and actually IS1 quite clearly says it's not encouragement. If something is material to you, you must report on it. And I think, I don't know how much more we can say, a must is a must. Thank you very much. right? And the must relates to climate reporting, biodiversity, gender inequality, governance structures, and we could go through a list of 100 different topics. I do not see that this would really provide much value. So that is, in a nutshell, a stand-up answer to all of the questions asked. Thank you very much, and back to you, Bill.
Wow. Andreas, bravo. You responded to all the points raised by advisory council members. Thank you very much. Before we go on, though, I was going to ask Neely to take the floor to provide us an update on the feedback that we have previously provided. Greg, you hadn't you didn't have a chance to take the floor before. I will give you this this chance. Please make it brief, and perhaps it requires a response from Andreas. But Greg, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. Sort of just on the chairman's comments, two things I found I sort of disagree with is the comment about nobody wanting to look at pension accounting. In the UK, especially in the FTSE, it's a major priority of CFOs. There's a whole industry, the bulk annuity industry, that's been built up that's doing sort of 20 to 30 billion per annum on this. The regulator on the pension side is forcing the companies to move to buyout, and there's a whole series of phases that get involved, and possible, and that has impacts on the accounts. So I would possibly argue against the view that it's not a highly important topic. The second point is, and I don't know how fickle this is, but in terms of inflation accounting amongst the investor community, the last 3 months, the demand for discussion on that has just gone through the roof. And typically, it comes from, it's something that a lot of people haven't thought about for 10, 15 years. It's really strange given the amount of money that's been printed by government. You know, the typical question that we're getting are things like, you know, how's it affects the IFRS accounts? How's it affect the statutory accounts? Obviously, IFRS leads into that. So those two topics are actually becoming, are very important and being spoken a lot by the users. And that was just my observation. Thank you.
Greg, thank you. In the interest of time, I'm going to ask Neely to take the floor to provide her update. Greg, thank you for that. Andreas, thank you again. That was comprehensive and informative. So well done.